Welcome to our December 1st meeting. Please join me in rising. Pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Dennis? Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne has asked to be excused. Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Kaplikalair?
Here.
14 members present.
Petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. We have no special awards today, so we'll proceed to privilege of the floor for the public. We have one person who signed up in advance, but others can speak after that. Don Hassing from Colton, New York. Welcome, Don.
Good evening. It's great to have the opportunity to address the members of the Tompkins County Board of Legislators. My purpose in coming here is to try to motivate you to look at the science which has been accumulating for several decades now. Truly here in the U.S., we are not making use of the science which exists that can be utilized for the purpose of causing people to be able to change their behaviors so they do not become exposed to chemicals that cause numerous diseases. And our group is Cancer Action New York. We focus on cancer prevention. We started in 2000 to try to minimize releases of carcinogenic pollutants to the environment. And that's a very, very slow process. We tackled this open waste burning problem that exists across New York State and across the U.S. And we found that it's good to have made a little bit of traction and a little progress on that. But truly, the open burning continues to one degree or another, and it will continue for a considerable period of time. In the meantime, we used this interest in the open burning to look at the various ways that chemicals like dioxins, which are produced in open burning, become a part of our environment and our food supply in particular, and how that is related to cancer causation. We made this kind of a slight leap in faith, but it's very, very reasonable as well. We just got to thinking that when so many people have cancer, it must be that there's a lot of people being exposed to these particular things that cause cancer. And as far as I have come to understand by reading a lot of scientific papers and reading a lot of textbooks about cancer causation and cancer biology, it's clear that some of the big exposures that everybody's getting, which would lead to this, you know, one in two guys and one in three females having cancer, according to the American Cancer Society, the big exposures truly are consumption of animal fats, which contain many, many, you know, known human carcinogens like dioxins and PAHs and polycyclic, which are polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons for a, you know, long chemical word. Chemicals like PBDEs, these fire retardants, they're now found in our food supply. Back in 2003, the Institute of Medicine of the, you know, National Academies of Sciences published a report. It was titled Dioxins and Dioxin-like Compounds in the Food Supply, Strategies to Decrease Exposure. And it was their recommendation that girls and women of childbearing age would reduce their consumption of animal fat for the purpose of limiting their dioxin exposure. That was based on this concern about endocrine disruption. They would have even been stronger and more inclined to, you know, make that recommendation more strongly if they had been making use of this cancer risk assessment that EPA has been working on and just kind of working on and working on. According to US EPA, there's about a 1 in 1,000 excess cancer risk from the average consumers due to consumption of animal fat. It's about 95% of our exposure to dioxins is as a result of consuming the milk, the meat, the dairy, the cheese, you know, this food that contains the fat that was in an animal's body where the dioxins accumulated, and then we are exposed when we consume that fat. The open burning is part of that problem. But truly, there's another problem that should have been fixed a long time ago. The animal feeding industry, you know, the entities which feed animals commercially and raise them for commercial production purposes, they practice this feeding by, they utilize animal fat sometimes, and it's very difficult to ascertain exactly how much this takes place. There are millions of metric tons of animal fat created from our consumption and our rendering of these animal products, and then there's no further information. The Renderers Association has a website, they have the data, millions of metric tons, but they don't break it down as to what it gets fed to. It says consumed, so something's eating it. And sure, dogs and cats eat some animal fat, but hogs and poultry and cattle are fed that on occasion, and fish are fed that. And see, because the pollutants are in the animal fat, if you feed the animals the animal fat that has these pollutants in them, you're just really just making the problem worse than if just it was just the open burning and you had the dioxins in the environment and then you just didn't feed this stuff back to the animals. So really hoping that that practice will go away. Organic farmers, it's not legal for organic farmers to feed animal fat to their food animals other than in the case of farm-raised fish.
You know, I'll have to ask you to wind up, please.
Okay. Yeah, basically I'm just going to ask you guys if you would write a letter to Schumer and Gillibrand asking them to use the science to educate Americans, including Tompkins County residents and New Yorkers, about how to avoid exposure to known human carcinogens. It's very simple. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the public this time, address the legislature? If not, we'll move to privilege the floor for the legislators. Anyone wish to speak? Frank Proto?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of things for you tonight. I won't mention NYSEG at this time because you probably all received the same email I did from a gentleman named Doofy, which outlined some of the items that some of us have been dealing with or trying to deal with for the last couple of years regarding the cost of gas and electric and the shortfall and involvement of Iberdrola. And I would suggest you read the email. It's pretty thorough. But these are a couple of items that I picked up on in the last week. You know, the health care bill is a major concern at the federal level, and it's drifting down to our level a lot because of the need to cover individuals and also to address the concerns that are in the bill. You've probably been following the same news items I have. That's really not what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to talk about was, if you read the paper and you have an opportunity to do it, it's no wonder the public is confused and continues to be confused. In last week's Ithaca Journals, there were three articles on health care and outlining different parts of the bill. With all due respect to the Ithaca Journal, some of them were in conflict with each other. One came from the Albany News Bureau and two came from Washington. And as I read them, because in my capacity as health committee chair, you know, I'm trying to keep abreast of this anyway, but it's no wonder the public is confused because so many of the pieces of that lead to confusion, and it depends on who you're listening to at that moment. The latest, of course, is the issue about at what time do you want to get your mammogram, and that's created a whole list of concerns. But the summary that I've come up with is there's two basic items that I've drawn from any of the articles. Everyone is unhappy and is in agreement that there needs to be something done to cover health care. The system needs an overhaul. The question is, how do we do it? The second major concern, and it's one that we began to address at this board when we passed a resolution earlier this year, it's how the devil do we pay for it? Because the cost, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, the cost is going to be devastating. So stay tuned. It isn't over yet. Item two, or item three, I doubt that any of you receive this beside me, but perhaps you do, Grassroots, which as a member of Farm Bureau and your representative to the Ag and Farmland Board, I thought you'd be interested in a couple of items that came out in the latest issue from the national president of the Farm Bureau. You know, remembering your physics, that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I just would like to read you a couple of items that were in his latest article. And it's related to cap and trade. And I'm not taking sides. It's just that folks need to understand that there's a cost to all of this. And this is a quote. Under the cap-and-trade legislation in the House and Senate, American families will pay higher energy costs. According to the Department of Energy, energy costs could grow by $1,870 per household. Combined with higher costs for food, the additional yearly hit on families could total about $2,300 per household. Said another way, the cap-and-trade law would impose costs of up to $200 billion a year on American taxpayers. This is the kicker. At the farm gate, as much as 17%, and this is of interest because we have under consideration now open space considerations with regard to the county. At the farm gate, as much as 17% of U.S. agricultural land currently used for food production will be idled and planted in trees under the House bill. That is because the vast majority of incentive payments will go to people who choose to grow and maintain trees for greenhouse gas reduction rather than farmers who work to put food on the American tables. This shift in land use will hurt consumers at the grocery store. Food costs could rise up to an average of $33 billion annually by 2020 and up to $51 billion annually by 2030 as a result of the legislation. The reason I wanted to bring that up is because we've made a concerted effort in this county to maintain agricultural land, and I have to say that we have a stellar PDR, Purchase of Development Rights program, which tries to preserve the agricultural land. But we can't do it in isolation. And in New York State, it's getting tougher and tougher, particularly because of costs associated with the production of milk, for instance. And you probably read the same op-ed piece that I read in yesterday's paper. That's just my consumer minute. Last item, I don't know, I think Mike received one of these. I don't know if any of you received an envelope that looks like this. This is for public consumption. I'm sure I'm not going to blow anybody out of the water. I'll pass this around. It's a very, very nice notice that involves the former mayor of Ithaca, Alan Cohen. It's his wedding announcement. And I will pass this around so you can read it. He is married and has eloped. He is living in Paris with his new bride. But I wanted to bring that up because I know a lot of us have had an interest in Alan over the years. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there others who wish to speak? Martha and then Carol.
Frank, I thought this was maybe an invitation to a state dinner at the White House.
I didn't bring that one. I was telling Mike earlier, I have one from the Clinton administration.
You don't need one.
Well, they're letting anybody in nowadays. You know that.
I just wanted to mention that there's a concert coming up this Saturday called Life is Water. It's a benefit for Shale Shock, the group that's educating Southern Tier about concerns about gas drilling, hydrofracking gas drilling. It's at the State Theater Saturday at 8 o'clock with Sim Redman Band at Don of the Buffalo and the Horseflies. And so even if you just want to go to the music, it's worth it. But so that's this Saturday. I think you can, I bought tickets from the State Theater website, so that's all you need to know. Thanks.
Thanks, Martha. Carol?
I wanted to report back to this body because the last time we were here, we were encouraging people to come to the Tompkins County Council of Government hearing that we held on the response to give our residents the opportunity to respond to the DEC, the New York State DEC, draft supplemental generic environmental impact statement on the Marcellus Shale gas drilling. And I just have to say, I'll let other people talk if they want to about the kinds of comments that we got. I just want to say that it was absolutely one of the most incredible things that I have done in public life in the time that I have been here. 1,000 people came out to this hearing. About 100 got the opportunity to speak. Not everybody wanted to speak. I don't know that everybody was in unanimous agreement. But the sense of thanks to our government and our Council of Governments for holding this event when public hearings were being held in other parts of the state but not close enough for our residents to come easily was just palpable. I happened to sit at the table collecting the written comments. And it was really striking. In contrast, in the oral comments, many of them, a great distrust of government and those in authority was being expressed, and a hope that people would be, that the DEC would be thinking of the effects on everybody and taking care of us. In the written comments, as people handed them in, I just got this great sense of trust in us as officials, in TCOG, that and a sense that people wanted their comments to go in with the group and that we would take their comments seriously and we would take them to some next step. So I really just came out taking that responsibility very seriously. I am hoping that this body, PDEC, has this on the agenda coming up, I believe. So I'm hoping this body will consider passing a resolution based on the kinds of things we've been hearing from residents. I just wanted to pass along that sense that I got, that we would know what to do with these comments. They can be found. The written comments, I know so far, are posted on the TCOG website. It's through Tompkins County, through our link, and then to Keep TCOG, and then there's a gas drilling page, and you can actually see the scanned versions of those documents, and at some point when we have the transcript of the oral comments, that will be there as well. And in the meantime, you can get to the video also of the hearing for those who miss it. It went on for 4 hours. It is nicely chaptered. You can get just to the people's comments you'd like to hear, the sampling. I encourage people to do that. It was incredible.
Thank you, Carol. Pam Magus.
I had some not so good news. The comment period for the garbage truck, long-haul garbage truck limitations on the road. Actually, it's not just garbage trucks. It's all trucks on certain roads. At the DEC, getting my departments all mixed up. DOT has promulgated these regulations, proposed regulations, and which would take many of the trucks off of our highways here in Tompkins County. The comment period was supposed to end at the end of November, and for reasons that are very unclear, they've extended the comment period for a second time until the 15th of December. Now, the good news about that is that means that people who didn't get to write their comments or would like to express their unhappiness with this extension have an opportunity to contact the DOT and express their opinions. But it was not very encouraging when they delayed this once again.
Thanks, Pam. quickly, Frank.
Pam, can you say, is there any, do you have any idea how the comments have been run?
Yes, I'm on the governor's task force on this, and we had a meeting about a week and a half ago, and at that time they reported that 60% of the comments that they received were in favor of the regulations. So perhaps that's why they extended the time period, was because I don't know, but it was a substantial majority of people were in favor of these regulations, at least the people who had responded to them.
Thanks.
Jim Dennis.
A short comment about that. I made a phone call from a number I got in an email the other day to the DOT office in Albany, spoke to a gentleman about the issue and asked him why the extension was, and his answer was that they were feeling some pressure from some other organizations to extend it, and they're not organizations that we would be, they're basically opposed to the regulations. So he thought that it was good that people were calling him up, and he was listening to at least one person at that time. So that's what I would do, get the number and call him up.
Thanks, Jim. Carol, quickly.
Just a quick addition to what I said about that hearing. I meant to thank the people from here who had really worked very hard on that. I really just showed up and worked that night. Will was there working. Ed Marks, who had put a lot of work into the written comments from the planning department. And then Pam and Martha were just very intricately involved with the planning and putting on of that event, along with other people from TCOG, Don Barber, and all of the excellent help that went into putting on this incredible event and getting the word out. So thank you. Marshall Lynch, publicizing, and Michelle for processing all of that paper.
Thank you, Chair.
Anybody out? I'm sorry.
Are there other comments from legislators? Kathy Lucevera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. It's December, and it's time to start thinking about Light in Winter, that wonderful event that takes place in January that's a collaboration between science and the arts. This year, they're bringing, there's a couple of concerts that I'm interested in. One is Spheris, and the other is the Klezmatics. The Klezmatics, I know because of their early work, bringing together world music and klezmer music. And if it sounds crazy to you, it's because you haven't heard it yet, but it's really wonderful. Lightinwinter.com, wonderful way to deal with January, and I recommend it highly. Also want to put on a list of things in the news that I'm grateful for today. To hear that the Washington, D.C. Common Council took the bold step of in favor of marriage equality. We'll see what Congress does with that, but there's some hope, at least on the parts of many of us who believe in equality as strongly as we do transparency in local government and democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else wish to speak? Thank you. Dooley Kiefer.
It was exciting to me to see that we can get in the front door of the courthouse on some really nice steps. It's been a long time since we've been able to do that. I hope the public enjoys coming in the front way now.
Thank you, and thanks to our facilities managers. We'll move on to municipal official. I don't see we have a municipal official here for a report, I don't think. So then we'll move on to our special topical presentation. Fernando de Aragon is here to give us an update on our long-range transportation plan. He's got some handouts.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. So a couple of you have heard this presentation, and Martha Robertson, I'd like to thank you for inviting me to give me the idea to come here. And invited me to come and present to you. Let me just start by saying that I'm the executive director. My name is Fernando de Aragon, executive director of the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council. And I'll take 2 minutes to tell you what that is. The Transportation Council is what's called a metropolitan planning organization. All urbanized areas with 50,000 population or more in the United States have an MPO, a Metropolitan Planning Organization, whose mandate is to manage the expenditure of federal transportation dollars in their planning area. The planning area for our MPO is Tompkins County. Other MPOs have boundaries that are multi-county or even interstate if they're near a state boundary. The mandates for the Transportation Council for MPOs is to have a 20-year long-range transportation plan that is updated every 5 years. We also produce a 5-year schedule of projects, transportation projects, and our annual work programs. But I'm here to speak to you about the long-range transportation plan, which we have a deadline for completion of an update in December. In a couple of weeks, I'll be bringing this before the committee of the policy committee of the Transportation Council. So the presentations, you can see it's took it down from a PowerPoint. I'll go kind of quickly through it. I am going to focus most of the time on the analysis that we did on future scenarios for transportation in the county. I think that is the part that kind of grabbed the attention of folks and may have a couple interesting things to talk about there. Basically, we completed the documents, the different chapters that are in it. It's a pretty standard planning document. The one very important component, of course, is the goals and objectives that are found in Chapter 3. Goals and objectives, if you look here, there's this graph. Kind of lays out the strategies and the structure of the goals and objectives. We're basically trying to identify the different components in transportation and how they interrelate with the community, with the environment, with land uses. So we have the what we call proximity, which is more than anything addresses the land use patterns in the area, how origins and destinations are relate to each other geographically, are they close to each other or not. Connectivity, which is how they are, how the origins and destinations that we have in the community are linked. Mobility is the different ways that we can get from point A to point B in our community. Those are, of course, integrated with our quality of life because they each affect the way we move around the county, and that we all know affects our quality of life tremendously. And of course, transportation has significant environmental impacts, and we'll see, we'll talk a little bit more about that. How all those factors come together lead us to this overall goal that we have of sustainable accessibility, that we called it. Basically, the idea that, you know, giving people the opportunity to move when they want, how they want, in a convenient, safe manner, and in a sustainable manner, in a way that we can envision we'll be able to maintain over the very long term. Now, one thing I failed to mention that is a very important component of this long-range plan is the climate change and energy position statement that was developed and endorsed by the Transportation Council. But basically, the group has taken a stance that the plan needs to be developed with the expectation that we are going to be facing higher energy prices in the future, and that global warming is real and something that needs to be addressed. And with that as a background, we went about our work and in developing the goals and objectives, the different strategies and programs that are included in the transportation plan. That is particularly critical as we did our Chapter 5 and our scenario analysis. What we did here, we have a transportation model that uses land use components and characterization of the road network in the county to help us identify what the impacts are on traffic. So we can change different land use characteristics and different network characteristics. When I say network, I mean the, you know, the roadways in the county, and see what the different traffic patterns are going to be. The changes we can make go into the future. So if we make assumptions of what the population growth is going to be, where people are going to be located, we can model that into future years. Now, the work we did was done in close collaboration with the planning department and the comprehensive plan of the county. We wanted our documents to be mutually supportive and sort of analyze each other, and certainly to be able to provide the transportation analysis for the comprehensive plan. What we found is very interesting as we did our work. Let me just say in general what we were trying to do, and our goal was to meet the county's stated plan reductions for carbon emissions, which in our planning horizon was 40% reduction from current numbers. That became quite a challenge to do in our analysis. We developed a number of scenarios that are shown in this page, and what we're trying to do is to isolate different factors in our analysis. So we first did a trend scenario, again following the land use scenarios that are found in the comprehensive plan. And so using the trend, we basically identify where the land use development patterns in the last 10 years and stretch them out to 20 years. We then did a plan-based scenario that applied the land use components that are found in the comprehensive plan as a preferred development scenario. And to that, we added components of clean fuel vehicles. We tried reducing the drive alone in commuters in the county. We also did some overall reductions of drive alone vehicles. And what we found, and I give you some of the output charts, and you know I won't bore you with all the numbers, but what started to become evident is that multiple things needed to happen at the same time. There was no one factor, whether it's clean fuel vehicles or reducing trips or having more efficient land use or smart land use type development, none of them individually was going to give us the reductions in carbon emissions that we were looking for. So as you look at these different charts and you look to the bottom, you start to see combinations of what we call the aggressive AVM, which is aggressive auto vehicle mixed fleet. In other words, a more efficient fleet of vehicles in the county. High trip, when we talk about high trip, it's high trip reductions of drive-alone vehicles. When you start to combine these factors, then you start to reach the levels of reductions that we're looking for. Remember, we're looking for a 40% reduction in CO2 emissions. So, in a nutshell, in the very last page, the conclusions we find, no silver bullets, but there are indeed a lot of synergies. These different factors work together to give us the results that we need. We need to reduce vehicle miles traveled, particularly by single occupancy vehicles. The drive alone cars are one of the factors that we must definitely try to affect if we're going to reach the emission reductions that we said we were going to have in our comprehensive plan. But we also need to have a cleaner vehicle fleet overall. Those two are critical components that brought the largest amount of change as we were doing our analysis. In addition to that, we do need smart land use development patterns. We need to be careful how we develop. Sprawl continues to be counterproductive to the ability to implement transportation programs that will be able to provide options for transit and other group travel options like ride sharing and car sharing. All those things work better when we have smart land use type development patterns. The other aspects we found, we need to support, we need to support the alternatives to drive alone, transit, bicycle, pedestrian, ride share, car share, telecommute, van pools, TDM. There's a lot of options out there, and a lot of what our plan talks about is how we can bring those options to bear in our local community. And of course, the very last bullet talks about national state policy coordination and having support at the national level. Now, some of those things, like support at the national level and, you know, what kind of direction we're going to get from the feds and from the state, are things that maybe we can affect peripherally but not directly. But the ones we can affect directly, providing programs like car sharing and ride sharing, we are going to work very hard to try to provide people with options and alternatives to be able to get out of their drive-alone vehicles. The other huge factor, and this will be the last thing I say, and if there's any questions, I can take some, that comes to play, of course, is energy prices. And in 2008, gas peaked to $4 a gallon, and we saw people change the way they get around in a very significant way. More transit use, people looking for alternatives, more carpooling, et cetera. We can't control the price of energy. However, you know, like I said, we will keep an eye on that. We think and we made assumptions that it will go up, so that's going to work to move people to seek this alternative. So we need to be ready to provide those for the general public. We will continue to work, of course, with the things that we can work at a local level. So if there's any questions.
Thanks, Fernando. Mike Ziegler?
I was just wondering, you mentioned clean fuel a couple of times, and I'm kind of wondering what you envision as clean fuel.
Well, the model that we use provided a menu of alternatives that was provided to us by EPA. This is a model interface, the one that provides the CO2 emissions. In there, it included everything from gasoline, hybrids, hydrogen fuels, natural gas powered vehicles, electric vehicles, and we indicate all these, what we use for a vehicle fleet as we look into the future. When we say aggressive AVM, we're looking at a pretty clean fleet of vehicles, a lot of electric, some hydrogen, some natural gas. When we say a more moderate AVM, then we're including more conventional, more hybrid, a higher percentage of gasoline. Again, those are all indicated here. We try to be realistic. We never said, you know, everybody's going to be driving electric in 20 years because we felt that was unrealistic. But we were more aggressive than the EPA, who provided an estimate for future years, and I think they still had straight gasoline-powered vehicles at like 80% in 20 years. You know, we felt that was too conservative, that we can do better. We have to do better.
How is electric really clean for us, considering we have the coal-powered plant?
That's a good point. You know, this analysis can only go so far. Yes. Everyone talks about going electric, but what does that mean at the point of generation? Yes, I admit that, you know, but where are we going to be in 20 years? You know, I couldn't tell you.
Frank, and then Mike Hattery.
Thanks, Mike. Fernando, I notice on the agenda for your council for the meeting on the 15th, the two of the committees have to vote, the policy committee and the planning committee have to vote to approve the final draft of this. This is the plan.
Right.
Does that also require a couple of questions? Does this plan require the county to approve it?
No.
No. It's based on a set of assumptions that are the assumptions are compiled from the county's comprehensive plan, the resources you mentioned.
Right.
Suppose the assumptions change.
Well, the plan can be amended, and it has been amended in the past. I mean, it's not a static document. So if something were to change dramatically over the next 5 years or in a noticeable way, something that really makes the stated document incorrect, that we would go ahead and amend it.
No, not incorrect, just adapting to the situation
yes,
at
yes.
that time. The the reason I'm asking is, you know, we're one of the very few ways that the county raises money is through property tax. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you're doing transportation planning, but some of the proposed, well, the scenarios as well, and this is the first time some of us have had a look at this, so right. Bear with me a little bit. The conclusions about smart land use and whatnot, because bringing transportation and their options to certain parts of the county based on what's perceived to be smart land use by some may change some of the transportation patterns for good. I mean, we saw 3 million riders at TCAT, as you know, for 2 years now. The concern that I have is should some of the plan components be run by, and I'm just going to pick assessment for a department, simply because should we be forecasting what the changes that the transportation might provide might change the use in different parts of the county for land use? Will that also drive a change in property taxes for those areas because some of the uses that they may have been used for are not proposed in this plan? Because you don't have an unlimited supply of income, and 99% of it comes from the feds anyway. And we don't know how secure that is from day to day.
And I don't either.
So, maybe I'm reaching here a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's... you know, this is a planning exercise that was taken at a very high level. It did not seek to recommend any particular land use. It did try to work together with the comp plan, and so we used the scenarios that we found in the comprehensive plan already, because we wanted to be supportive of that effort. But even there, of course, we all understand we don't have land use jurisdiction. But it's important to keep the scale of the planning exercise in perspective and understand also the limitations of the different models that we use. More than anything, this has given us an idea of order of magnitude. It's given us an idea of interrelationship of different factors. So what I feel pretty comfortable saying, and other studies have provided this information also, is that, yes, we need a cleaner vehicle fleet. Yes, we need to reduce the amount of drive-alone vehicles and the way we move as a society, you know. And that those are going to be critical components in reducing the carbon emissions as we go into the future. And, you know, the amount, the 40%, well, it gave us something to shoot for to do the exercise. How much are we going to reach? Well, we really, really don't know. But and there's so many factors that are interrelated. Right. But, I mean, all of a sudden, if the gas drilling happens and we have thousands of truck trips, you know,
all bets are off.
All bets are off. So of course, there's a lot of factors that could
enter.
That cannot be included in an analysis like this.
One more, Mike.
Please make it quick.
Because of the land use piece, and this is just the plan that's being proposed is countywide, and because the county does not have land use authority. At what point will the towns that do have land use authority, at what point do they weigh in on this plan? Because some of the proposals might change the characteristics of their towns.
Well, the towns and all jurisdictions in the county are represented in the Transportation Council. This information has been sent to everybody, all the different municipalities. So we made an effort to reach out and let them know what we're doing and what information is out there. Again, what we're proposing in what you're saying, those land use scenarios, it's already been vetted and bounced through the comprehensive planning process, which was also an extensive outreach to the community. So I think we're working within a pretty conservative framework in the items that we're addressing any kind of land use, which is in this chapter 5. So I feel pretty comfortable that this has been vetted in the community substantially, and we're not presenting any new proposals beyond anything that's included already in the comp plan.
Please remember, bicycle travel for some of us from Slaterville to downtown Ithaca and return, it could be a little difficult.
We move on. Mike Hattery?
The material you gave us mentions the CO2 goal reduction. Did this modeling effort include important other criteria like commuter costs, like commute time, or public sector infrastructure costs involved with these scenarios?
What we did in some of the analysis here, where you have the second page of tables, talks about impacts on vehicle hours of travel. Not specifically to, did you ask about, not specifically to commuters as such, but the total, that's the VHT analysis. The VHT is vehicle hours of travel, VMT vehicle miles of travel. And as you can expect, there's as we reduce trips, we of course are reducing vehicle hours of travel, reducing the VMTs. This again, we're a lot of things happen at the same time when you start pulling people or start reducing the number of vehicle trips that are taking place. We do have this plan is what's called fiscally constrained. We need to make we have a financial analysis that where we projected the amount of money that we can expect at this time to be receiving over the 20-year period. Again, being a 20-year scenario and being in the times that we are right now, this is like the worst time ever to do a 20-year plan. I actually try to have this plan postponed for a year so I would have a better idea of what's going on, let the economy settle down, get a transportation bill from the feds. In any case, I'm not looking to make excuses, but we have a financial section in our plan where we made estimates as to the amounts of money will be coming in 20 years, and then we also made estimates of where, how that money would be dispersed among sectors within transportation, transit, highway, mobility, the TCAP. But we this plan does not go into project level. So we don't talk about, you know, fixing this bridge or that particular road. That we do in our transportation improvement program, our five-year road program. This is more of a policy document.
But it is bounded in terms of total, some estimate of total infrastructure costs.
Yes. Yes.
But not commute times? Total commuter hours or something?
No. We discussed those. We put them in there. As data, it's a lot. It's very rich in data. So if you ever need information, transportation is a good place to look. Our analysis was not looking to reduce commute times specifically.
Or maintain them at their current level.
Right.
Well, one more question, and if people have further questions, please take them up with Fernando after this. Martha?
Your last page has need to support alternatives to drive alone. I seem to remember last time there was a federal highway bill or transportation bill. I'm going to try not to call it just the highway bill. There was a little bit of money for things like trails. What do you know about the highway bill that they're looking at now? Is there going to be more opportunity for these alternatives? And also, do you have any sense whether it's going to come out this year or be postponed?
I think my guess is that it's going to be postponed. It's going to be about a year before we see it. It's going to come after the health discussion and possibly after the energy bills. So people are saying about a year. On your question on the alternative transportation type programs, I certainly hope that they will be there. The programs that were in existence in the bill that just ended were very popular, and in fact, some folks try to remove those programs, and there was a huge outcry, and they were put back in. So they've been through that exercise of trying to get rid of those and make the whole bill more highway-related. and that doesn't mean they won't try, whoever they are, you know, that won't be attempted again, but I think you will find that those types of programs are very popular and will remain in one form or another. Safe route to school, transportation enhancement programs, recreational trails programs. What they are trying to do is reduce the number of silos. You know, there's something like 180 different funding lines in that bill, and they're trying to reduce those to a handful, like a dozen. So it's a huge, huge exercise.
Very, very brief comment from Kathy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to, two things. Great report. It helps me to see it broken down into the numbers as somebody that likes long-term goals and then to see what it takes to get there. This is very helpful. I also want to say, as somebody that's on the Fall Creek listserv, how helpful the practical comments that you make with regard to belonging or joining, deciding to join Ithaca Car Share, how helpful and practical they are. For example, I don't have a truck anymore, but I could use a truck. Instead of having to have two vehicles, families could consider like in my family, going down to perhaps one car and one scooter. Things like that that don't just help the environment, that have an impact on your pocketbook. Those kind of practical suggestions are really helpful, and they're much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando.
Thank you. Of course, all this is on the web, on our website, so you're welcome to check it out anytime.
Any further questions, take them up directly. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Move on to Chair's report. Just to remind you, we have a department head legislature meeting. It was finalized and announced today for December 16th. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow. That's 3:30 to 5:30. It will be at the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library, and we will have a reception, kind of an end-of-year reception afterwards. We have a very broad draft agenda that was circulated today, and there is a planning committee, so if you have further suggestions, you can talk to them.
What was the date again?
December 16th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's a Wednesday, 3:30 to 5:30. And there'll be a reception afterwards that partners and spouses and significant others are invited to. And that will also be the beginning of mention of a next year retreat, both to include new legislators, but also as kind of a planning tool for the next legislative term for all legislators and department heads. It has not been set yet, probably late January, early February, but there will be a process developed as to who can assist in planning that as well. I have no chair's appointments, so we'll move on to Mark.
Excuse me. And we have a couple of our new legislators here. New legislators are included in that meeting?
Yes.
On the 16th?
Yes, they'll get that email to be invited. So all new legislators, as of January 1st, are invited to that to observe, to the 16th meeting. Report from County Administrator Joe Mariani.
Thank you, Michael. I have just a couple of things, and all are brief. First of all, on your desks is a list of policy updates that Paula has circulated. You have several of the amended policies on your agenda tonight, so we thought it would be helpful for you to see the progress we've made on updating about 50 policies that we said we'd like to do over the course of the year. So you know we are more than halfway done now. We've done 25. We have six pending. So we are entering the home stretch of this process of updating our administrative policies. And thank you for your involvement in that. Second, very briefly, and I'm sure Patricia Carey will report fully to Frank's committee soon, but I did happen to bump into Patricia Carey today, who reported on the Rapid Rehousing Initiative that's funded with significant amounts of federal grant dollars, and she's reporting preliminarily very good progress in terms of being able to get people out of shelters and into rental situations, a significant reduction in the number of people in shelters and into rental housing situations. So I just wanted to report some very early good news about the early effects of that program. Finally, I will ask for an executive session tonight to talk about labor relations and a personnel matter. So I would request that we could spend some time on those issues in executive session. That's my report.
Thank you, Joe. There's no questions. I'll move on to Julie.
Thank you. In the Ithaca Journal recently, there was an article that the Healthcare Consortium and concern about union membership and voting rights. Is there any update on that, or is the general report the most recent information?
It is the most recent information. So we have provided a legal opinion to the state insurance department about voting representation of the unions on the consortium board, and we are still working with the insurance department on that question. So there's really, I think the report was very accurate, and there's no updates on it.
Thank you. On to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
No.
Thank you. And finance director, David Squires.
I want to report that on December 8th, the county will be selling $20,440,000 of bond anticipation notes. If I'm not wrong, this is one of the largest issues we've had. Primarily, it's a renewal of $17,600,000 of notes that are outstanding, the largest amount being the $10 million of notes we have for the health department. But we are borrowing some new money, and I just want to bring this to your attention that we had this project, federal stimulus project, on Warren Road, and we only recently had, from my understanding, the state approved the contract. At the time the state approved the contract, the county had already had over $1 million paid out on this project, of which is being taken out of the county's idle cash. Part of the reasons why we're borrowing some new money is because we cannot pay the bills on this project because we're not getting reimbursed. The stimulus is not stimulating our treasury here. And I'm actually holding about $1 million worth of bills on this project because I cannot jeopardize the county's liquidity anymore on this project. Hopefully, now that the contract, as I understand it, is approved, that the process will flow. But one of the absurd things about this process is we have to spend money to get reimbursed for the stimulus. We have to spend money and send to Albany actual paid receipts, paid documentation that they will reimburse us on. And this is a $6 million plus project. So it's kind of anti-stimulus and as far as the county's welfare at the present time. I mean, because first of all, we haven't been able to pay the bills for some of the work because we haven't gotten the money, and it's also depleted our liquidity. So much for the editorial comment. This is making me a little grayer. A good news item is that as we concluded the budget process, the final third quarter sales tax came in, and it showed a stabilization of the situation, where actually the last month of income for the month of September actually was a net increase over the prior year, the first such experience this year. In October, the October sales tax stabilized, and we didn't go down any. The county had a slight positive increase, and which was so that makes 2 months in a row, and the fourth quarter of last year was so horrendous that we're fairly confident that we couldn't be lower than last year. And I hesitate to bring this up, but in January, I would urge the legislature as soon as the new term begins to start recording your time. This is going to fundamentally change the way retirement reporting for elected officials. It's going to fundamentally change the way the county will report the service of the legislative members. Right now, the system is keyed in based upon a formula, and in the future, you'll be required to do this three-month study, and whatever that comes out is what you would be reported to the system in. So as soon as possible, as soon as you take your term, I think we need to have a little session to make you understand how the system's going to work, because the log, it's essential that the log be credited properly, because once the log's in there, that's what's going to be reported monthly, unless you choose to report continually, like through payroll, do a monthly reporting continually, then that would change. You could get updated monthly based upon how many hours you put in. But the way the system is designed is a survey is done for a three-month period, and that would determine how you would be reported for the whole term of your office, because it would be fixed based upon that survey result.
And before, there's a lot of questions about that. It will be taken up by our Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee before January. I did see two hands, though, Carol Chalk and then Mike Hattery.
Yeah, I have two questions, David. I'll give you both questions. You can take them in whatever order. One is the rate that you anticipate as we roll over these bonds, how it compares. And the other one is whether there's anything that we can do as a legislature or that our chair, or is there anything we can do to help you try to collect from the state in a more timely fashion?
Well, I don't think that there's a limited, you have a limited influence right now with what's going on in Albany about getting money out of the state, because if you look back, California, the history of California is in our future. And that's a very ugly circumstance, but I think it's a real and likely probability.
Any other question about rate. Possible rates?
The rate. Right now, when we financed last year, we had the lowest rate we'd ever had, 0.73%. As about 3 weeks ago, two counties borrowed money similarly rated to the county, and they came in under that rate around. And the markets have been... for top-rated counties, the markets have been very good. There's a wide disparity. For example, I believe it was Ulster County had in a neighborhood of, you have to have a large volume, you know, so $20 million is going to be a very attractive note. But Ulster County had like a $30 million issue, and they sold for approximately 0.5%, whereas another entity that wasn't top rated, a comparable rate would be about 1.1%. I mean, it's really the largest spread. Generally, the basis point spread of is very narrow between the ratings, but right now they're very large. And I've been told that the size of the issue and our excellent credit rating will end in a very positive result for us.
And Mike Hattery, and then Frank.
David or Joe, I think we discussed, and I've read briefly about the state controller offering some kind of financing scheme or approach to smooth the pension bump. Is there enough known about that to know whether that's going to be a useful approach or something that might attract us?
It's a smoothing. It's allowing us to. It would allow entities to borrow a portion of their current payment. You know, and primarily you're talking about 2010's payment. So it doesn't provide any great relief, because you would be borrowing to pay an ongoing operating cost, because it's not smoothing out the cycle. It's just saying we're going to let you pay, you know, let's say two-thirds of the bill.
So
you can borrow the difference.
It's not smoothing this multi-year bump we're looking
at. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Frank Proto.
Dave, these are BANs, the
yeah.
$20 million. 5 years?
1 year.
1 year, and maybe year to year?
Well,
until a bond is...
Yeah, like, for example, the health department, normally we go into bond the health department, because of the fact that we want to be able to use the proceeds for the sale of the property to reduce the outstanding debt. And we don't know what the proceeds will be. That's why we're not going into bonds at this point. It'll be next year, hopefully.
And just an observation. I don't know if this is the first time that the counties had to submit vouchers paid in order to get reimbursed.
That's the standard procedure.
Yeah. I mean, every human service agency that I know of almost has to do that in order to get reimbursed. So the state is not being kind.
Thank you, David. I'd like to move on. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? If not, we'll move on to the consent agenda, which includes appointments. These are resolutions not expected to be controversial. They can pass in a single vote for appointments. All of these are to the Water Resources Council. There are 10 of them. Lynn Leopold, Joan Jerkowicz, Rick Manning, Mary Shelley, Frank Frodo, Barry Goodrich, Ed Bugliosi, James McGarry, Marjorie Rinaldo Lee, and Patrick Barry. And we have two resolutions, one from Facilities Infrastructure Committee, Resolution A, which is Budget Adjustments, Highway Department, Highway Division, and Government Performance Workforce Relations Committee, Resolution B, Adoption. Off. All right. That'll be on the committee report. Who'd like to move the consent agenda? Pam moves it and Martha seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? That's unanimous. Let's go to our standing and special committee reports. Let's start with Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee. Pam Magnuson, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. I just wanted to do a quick report on our last meeting on November 12th, because I did do it at our last legislative meeting. Most of the resolutions that we passed at our meeting, I'm not going to talk about that, but I will say that we spent a lot of time talking about the appointment to the Water Resources Council, most of which we just passed, but that was really a real time-consuming discussion that we had there, which hasn't yet to be resolved. We had an update on the comprehensive plan and its implementation. And then I just wanted to say that I think I mentioned at our last meeting that the community housing affordability program that is a partnership among Cornell, the county, and the city. I think I mentioned that we had put out a notice of funding availability, and after that went out, there was a meeting, an information meeting for people who might be interested in applying for that funding, and it was showed tremendous interest. There were 26 people there, 29 people there, representing 22 organizations or businesses, and it was a mix of not-for-profit and for-profit developers. So everybody was very encouraged by the response. And I just want to say that on the 9th of December, we will have our next PDEC.
Thank you, Pam. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Frank Proto.
Pam, at some point, and I realize the year is winding down, I just thought it might be a good idea for us on the Planning Committee to get an update on the status of the open land policy, the open land proposal that the state has. We have a representative in the Planning Department who sits on that board. It used to be Barbara Blanchard when she was a member of this board, but I'm not sure, it might be Katie Borghella, but I'm not sure about that. The reason that I bring that up is that I think it would be good for us to know the status of the acquisition and where open land use has been either acquired or is tying in with the Emerald Necklace, which is the proposed long-range plan for many of the properties and perhaps the state and national forests around. I know trails are involved and everything, but it might be appropriate to have Kate, if it's Katie, have somebody come to the committee and give us a little bit of a status report. It's been a long time since we've heard anything about that.
I'll check into it.
Thank you, Frank. On to Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. I would move Resolution C, and it's delegating the Finance Director of the County of Tompkins, New York, to the power to authorize issuance and to sell $10 million revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county commencing January 1, 2010. And I would move that.
Seconded by Mike Hattery.
And let me explain the difference. You are in receipt of a Resolution C in your packet, or in your red folder, and it had an amount of $8 million in there. We had a short meeting prior to this meeting and had passed the resolution, and we learned during that meeting that we needed to increase the amount from $8 to $10 million, and the committee revoted, and we voted 4-0 to increase the number from $8 to $10 million after the finance director made a few statements to us. And it, as it says in the beginning of the resolution, it's a revenue anticipation note. And that money would be coming from New York State. And as you heard earlier, there is some question, doubt, concern on how quickly not only this county but other counties will be receiving revenue from New York State given its current financial situation. David is here and he would love to answer any questions any of you may have.
So Frank Proto, is there a second? So Mike Hatter seconded. So Frank Proto.
Dave or Mike, Dave or Jim, the other than stating the purpose as in anticipation of receipt basically of state funds or reimbursements, do we have to be any more definitive on this than that?
Now, the requirement on it is to produce a cash flow statement showing anticipated liquidity deficit. And you can only borrow up to, you have to prove basically the amount that you need. Typically the highest point of the year where your deficit would be cash deficit. With the most we've ever borrowed, I believe, is around $3.5 million on one of these. And I am really alarmed about the state of progress in Albany. So just before the meeting occurred tonight, I asked that it increase by $10 million. I wouldn't anticipate we'll be borrowing $10 million or even have to resort to using this, but things change so quickly. If, in fact, the state stops paying its partners, it would have, and it will have, and it has had, consequences on our ability to pay our own bills. And this is the quickest way we can get some relief. And frankly, it's the only way.
Mike Hattery, then Mike Sick.
Wait, okay.
I'll come back to you, Frank. Mike Hattery.
I think you clarified this in committee, but talk a little bit about whether, if a revenue is not going to be forthcoming, whether you would use a revenue anticipation note.
It's based upon, actually, cash flow projection is based upon your expected receipts. It's not tied to budget. It's tied to cash flow. But, in fact, we would not be borrowing to replace monies that have been taken away from the process. would be borrowing for receivables that aren't being paid in a timely fashion.
Mike Sigler.
I guess I have two questions. Maybe it's just the size. I don't remember doing
it. We've done it every year. It used to be $5 million, and we bumped it to $8 million. And I think it's probably appropriate to send a signal that this chaos in the land resulting from inaction in Auburn.
So about the size, but the other question is, the state's also never done this before, whereas it's wanted to withhold money from. It never really wanted to cut school districts mid-year. What's to say they won't do that, though?
That's precisely the point.
Yeah.
Well, no, but if that's precisely the point, then we're borrowing money on expenditures that we're never going to have the money.
No, withholding is different than cutting.
Well, withholding.
Withholding is maybe semantic, but if they haven't cut the appropriation, they just don't have the funds to honor the appropriation at this time. And that's the liquidity issue that we legitimately use this authorization for. The governor, what's confusing everybody is the governor saying they're going to stop making payments. Stopping making payments is different than cutting, reducing, adjusting the budget.
Sure.
If you don't have the money, you don't pay your bills. That's, and you're withholding payment.
I had Frank, then Mike, Jim Dennis.
Thanks, Mike. First, we have done this in the past, not just on this, but I just want to remind this board that a very recent instance, and I would have put this under my report, is that the health department is still waiting for reimbursement on the 2008, last quarter of 2008. We haven't received anything for any of the quarters in 2009. And years ago, we had to front some funds, and we passed a resolution around this table to help TC3 out, because there was a concern that the state was not cutting funding the way they just described it. They were slow in paying. And at that point, we had to get Cortland County also to go along with a resolution that provided that the county would front the money and that we would get reimbursed when the state's funding came to. It's like what we do with TCAT every once in a while. On the STOA money, at the beginning of the year, we usually pass a resolution saying that. So there is a precedent for this. The personal thing, and maybe this is a little anticipatory, but I'm not sure that I have to disclose, but I will, even though this hasn't gone to bid or anything else yet, that as a vice president with HSBC, I'm not sure if HSBC might be interested in these, but if they are, I thought you should know that even though I don't have any say in anything at this level, you should know that I'm a vice president with HSBC Bank, and if you'd like me not to vote on this, I will not vote on it.
Thank you, Frank. On to Jim Dennis and Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Michael. To Mike Sigler, the comment you made to David about what would we have to do, the county would have to make some extreme moves in terms of program, and you wouldn't wait till the next budget time to do that. You may have to do that pre the next budget time, and I think that's clearly something that people should have in their consciousness as we move forward.
Or take the state to court. Martha Robertson, then Carol Chung.
So the distinction, David, that you're making is that if they withhold rather than cut, if they cut, we can't expect we will get the money later.
Correct.
If they withhold, it's just a delaying tactic so they can make a little more interest in the meantime, or whatever reason they might have for doing it. And they're doing that for like TCAD's grant for water and sewer, a Town of Dryden grant for broadband. They're doing that all over the place. I mean, they've always done it to some extent, but it's really gotten worse. So do I have the distinction correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Carol Chow.
Yeah, I have some sort of bad news, good news calculations, and I just want to check with you on whether my understanding is correct. So Well, we would have to be issuing some revenue anticipation notes regardless, because it's just our part of our process, that because we are not getting this money from the state in a timely fashion, at 0.5% approximately, this is going to cost us about $50,000 to issue this and be able to sort of tide us over and carry the debt. That's sort of the bad news, is that so the state of New York is basically going to cost us about $50,000 extra that we shouldn't have to be paying. The good news is that because we have a good credit rating, it will be $50,000, and if we were a county that had one of these credit ratings that were over a 1% or bigger rate, we would be talking about $100,000 or $150,000 that of interest, essentially, that this would cost us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, the full $10 million is not due to the state. It's only possibly $2 million of the... We normally would do $8 million for our own needs. Do you have more, no further questions? Are you ready to vote? All in favor? Anyone opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you, Jim, for your report. Move on to Public Safety Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
Legislature hasn't met since the last... the committee hasn't met since the last legislature meeting. We're meeting, it's an unusual day, Thursday, December 10th, and instead of 3 o'clock, it's going to be 9 a.m., and I appreciate people's adjusting their schedules, so 9 to 11, Thursday, December 10th. That's my report.
Questions? Jim?
No, Mike. Let me just go back to the Budget Committee. We have a meeting scheduled for the 14th.
Okay. Thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee has not met since our last meeting, but they do have a meeting scheduled. I believe it's for the 16th, but they're moving it earlier because of the department head legislature meeting, and stay tuned for that timing change. Legislative Rules and Procedure Committee, Julie Kiefer, Chair.
At the last Rules Committee meeting, we made good progress, but since our next meeting is scheduled December 21st, I don't think that you'll be hearing any more from us this year, but our work will be completed for you all in January. So I have one resolution. Should I go ahead with
that? Please, please do.
Resolution D. Amending the rules of the legislature for order of business. I'll move it.
Is there a second? And Magazine seconds. Before we get into discussion, I want to note the time. I do not want to have an hour-long discussion on these rules. These rules are in process. Our interpretation of the rules can be broad or narrow depending on the will of this legislature. So we may disagree on some wording changes, but we should come to a vote in a timely fashion. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. First, I would like to tell you that there are some changes I need to read to you in the document that's in your agenda packet. If you look at Rule 4, Section 3.
I'm sorry, where's Rule 4?
It's
under Resolution D.
It is Rule 4.
Okay.
The first page, Section 3.
I see 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
There's a summary listing, and then below that, each one is fleshed out.
Section...
Okay. So you're on the second page then, Dooley?
I don't see section.
It's called Presentation of Proclamations, Petitions, Communications, and Notices.
I don't see it.
It's on the back of the page one. Second section is roll call of members, and the third is starting with presentation of proclamations.
Nope. I wondered why it made so little sense. I think I'm missing some. Yeah.
You have an extra copy?
Here, read mine.
Well, no, I can't really change it because I haven't got it. So I'm at a disadvantage here.
Yeah.
Is there a copy that will...
Yes, we're getting one from the bank table.
Well, there'll be about a half a dozen places in the document you have in your agenda packet, or most of you have in your agenda packet, that I will read to you.
Can I just ask, are these committee changes, or?
Yes, they're mostly typographical problems.
They were made at the committee?
They are mostly typographical problems.
So these didn't come from the committee?
To the extent that what is in the packet has any errors in it, and the clerk acknowledges them as such, they come from the committee's intent.
What I'm trying to ascertain is how much committee work we're going to be doing right now and how much of this is an individual suggestion, because you did ask us as members to make suggestions. Just trying to figure out how much law is being made on the floor and how much was made in private meetings.
What I plan to read to you are necessary changes in wording to reflect what the committee actually did. When I get finished that, there will be one or two more items that will reflect comments that have been received, which the group as a whole should consider, whether they want to change what's in front of them or not.
There's no chance of getting this in writing. I don't comprehend well what I'm being told as well as I do what I get in writing.
Help me, Mike. I don't know what you
can. I think
what Dooley is trying to move forward is that what was passed by committee had some typographical errors that was not noticed by committee. She wants to bring them to our attention. So that's the first batch. The second batch are actual substantive changes to the wording the committee did not take up. We take it one by one.
So these are lots of changes to what we got in our packet.
I think the first set is, I think Dooley summarized, maybe a dozen, and after that there'll be one or two that are more substantive. My understanding is the first set are things that were caught after the committee meeting that are typographical errors.
I'd like to ask that we have an opportunity to look at these at the next meeting of the legislature rather than have to do this orally.
So that's a motion to table until the next meeting?
It could be interpreted that way.
Well.
Is there a second? Greg Stevenson. So we'll be discussing the motion to table Resolution D until the December 15th meeting.
Let me just make my case and say this is about amending the rules of the legislature. I understand that some of these are an attempt to have what we're actually doing be consistent with what we say we're doing, something I'm always in favor of, getting the policy to be consistent with the practice. However, I don't think it's just me that's at a disadvantage here about not having had a printed copy. As a matter of fact, what we hear is that there's more than a dozen changes. Some of these changes are substantive. I think that, that's what the chair said, is that some are substantive, not just grammatical changes. And I believe that for transparency and for not rushing to change the rules of the legislature, we should have an opportunity to look these over.
I take issue
further
with being described as rushing.
Dooley, I haven't called on you yet. Further discussion? Carol Chung?
Yeah, I don't see a reason to rush through these, but I would be in favor of hearing first what the changes are and then deciding whether we need to table until the next meeting.
I misspoke. The actual
committee that far.
The actual motion is postponing until the 15th, not tabling. Dooley Kiefer?
Well, I was taking exception to the description of this as rushing to do this. Everyone has known that the Rules Committee has been working on amending the rules of the legislature all year, and everyone has known that we decided to bring forward not the entire set of rules at once, but small swallows at a time to make it easier for the group to deal with them. And the fact that I have offered to go through and make explicit what could easily be viewed as typographical errors may have been my mistake. I could have just left it for Kathy to make all of these changes, but in the interest of being totally open, I thought it was better to read all of these to you all, and then just to mention the couple of items which we have received comments on from fellow legislators that seem appropriate for discussion at this level.
So we're debating?
I am sorry to see if this gets delayed. I will vote against delaying it.
We're debating on postponing until the 7:15. I saw Will's hand and Frank.
Call the question.
Is there a second to call the question? Martha Robertson. That's not debatable. All in favor of calling the question, which limits debate, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Jim, was your hand up?
Yes.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. So there's 4 opposed. That must have been 10 in favor.
Right?
Five,
missed. No, it's 5.
There were 5 opposed.
What, did I count wrong? Okay, 5 opposed. 9 to 5, that... is the threshold 10?
9 to 5 is 14.
8 to call the question. Okay, so the question has been called. We're going to vote on the motion to postpone to December 15th. All in favor of postponement? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm 6. And opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails, 6 to 8. We're back to the main motion. Kathy and then Dooley.
I just want to reiterate that some people take in information differently, and presenting numerous changes not in writing on the floor is, I believe, not a very accessible way to do business, and it's certainly not transparent for the public because there's no record available for the public in advance of our discussion.
Dooley, you want to move through the recommended typographical or grammatical errors first?
Yes.
If I understand correctly, you were on page 2 in the section, was it number 3, starting with presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Yes. If you'll just look at the underlined paragraph, the first line, proclamations to take notice of, insert the word of, it's missing. If you will look at the third line that begins 1 week prior, I will just read that to you. 1 week prior to the legislature meeting, at which it will be read in time to be placed on the agenda. So change place to be placed.
Okay.
In the fifth line, I will read that to you. Meeting to allow adequate time for legislator review.
Can you hold on just a second? Okay.
Should I repeat that?
Yes.
Meeting to allow adequate time for legislator review. There's no substantive change.
What have you changed there?
It says legislators to review.
And you're changing it to?
Legislator review.
Legislator review. So you're taking out an S and the word to?
Yes.
Okay.
If you look at the last two lines, the last sentence says, the chair of the legislature shall agree with the appropriateness of the proclamation. That sentence should be moved up to become the penultimate sentence.
Second to last.
So you insert that before the third line from the bottom that says, the chair will include such as part of the next chair's report. There's a change in that, which I will read. The chair will include such as part of the next chair's report at the next legislature meeting.
So you're changing report of a legislature's meeting to...
At the next legislature meeting.
Report at the next legislature meeting. Is everyone clear on those changes? Are there any...
I just want to be clear. This entire paragraph here, 3, it's bolded and it's underlined. Is this all new?
Yes.
So it's new to be suggesting that the chair of the legislature should agree with the appropriateness of the proclamation. In the past, we had independent legislators bring to the chair a proclamation, and if they had an issue with it, sometimes they would have it announced at the event and then refer to that proclamation, and that was how they could deal with a proclamation that they didn't necessarily agree with. Now what we're doing is we're codifying that the chair of the legislature has the power that they didn't have before, so we're actually increasing the power of the chair of the legislature right now with this, if it's agreed to.
Perhaps it was the committee's understanding, and correct me if, well, Frank's gone, Mike, if you remember differently, that in fact the chair pretty much does allow proclamations on or not. Most other legislators are not familiar with what's coming, but the chair decides what will be on the agenda. And so some of us didn't view it as giving him or her more power.
I just want to separate the discussion. We're now discussing some of the content of the wording changes versus the typographical error changes. As long as we understand what we're doing. I saw Mike's hand next and then Kathy. Mike Hattery.
Yeah, I was just going to affirm that I think what we're after here was not changing the power of the chair, but making it clear that providing an avenue for legislators that had an issue with a particular, more of an avenue for legislators to provide input on these things, which now are basically the committee at least considered the power of the chair.
And Kathy, and then Martha.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what Mike was saying, but to me, I think it could have an unintended consequence. I'd like to assert that, unlike what Dooley said, I'm actually, after being on the legislature for a while, pretty much in with the rhythm and flow of the proclamations, and there's some that come up every year, and there's some that, due to special circumstance or certain advocacies, individual legislators bring forward. And it's been interesting to note that there are times when the chair does not agree with whatever is being advocated and has, at their discretion, decided to find a collegial way to deal with this individual legislator's request for a proclamation. And many times what's been decided is to have the proclamation read at an event by another legislator, or sometimes the timing of the event is right before the legislative meeting of the dates in question. So there's a possibility here, and it may be an unintended consequence, and I recognize that it might not have been intended, but that the chair of the legislature with this rule change could stop an individual legislator from bringing forth a proclamation that in the past would have been allowed to be brought forward. I say this because, as a member of minority group in many senses of the word, sometimes I know what it's like to bring forth an opinion that isn't popular and to have it steamrolled or pushed back. And I've experienced that a lot of late, and I hate to see this kind of attitude be brought to what had been formerly very collegial acceptances of proclamations by the legislature. So I personally do not like that sentence and would not want it put in a penultimate sense or in the last section of that paragraph either.
Okay, are we done reading, Dooley or anyone else? Did anyone else notice typographical
yes,
or grammatical
there
changes?
Are more.
Okay, let's proceed with those.
I'd like to come back to
my
substance later.
If it's on substance, could we come back to it? I'd like to get through the typographical and grammatical changes first and get them all at once. But I'll note you're next. Go ahead, Dooley.
If you look at number 4, section 4, announcements of executive sessions, there are four and a half lines underlined. That's the new language. If you look at the fourth line, I will read you the change, specifying the time to be taken up, at which time all other items of business shall be suspended. The word and is changed to at which time.
Are there any other grammatical or typographical
yes.
errors?
Yes. In section 5, privilege of the floor, the start of the third paragraph begins, no person, comma, not a member. The commas in that line should come out, so it reads, no person, not a member of the Tompkins County Legislature shall speak, etc.
So no commas, two
no commas,
commas coming out, okay?
Wait a second. Oh, I see it. Okay.
If you will go then
wait.
Down.
Top of the next.
10.
It's actually top
is
of the next
the first
page.
Paragraph?
No, third paragraph.
Paragraph.
Top of the next page.
Okay. Hold on a second. Okay, that first comma, no person, and then after legislature.
Yep, those are
okay,
both coming out.
Both of those.
So there's no interruption
okay.
in the flow.
We're going to talk about the content because we've been passing content that I'd like to discuss, but we'll do
we
that
We will
later.
Talk about the content.
Okay.
I just want to get to the typographical.
All right, and when we do that, are we going to do it in order?
Yes.
I'd like to suggest that we do it in order going through the document.
I have, I'm going to hold the other comments unless they're typographical in nature.
This refers to this typographical thing. I just want to lighten the mood by claiming credit that I found commas that Dooley said were right, that I needed to come in, and I am so proud of myself.
Okay, thank you. We're obviously a team here. Let's work together towards getting through this. Dooley.
In section 10, the second paragraph begins any resolution. In the second line, there is one change. I'll read you the second line. Meeting of the legislature, comma, unless a motion regularly made. So the word upon gets changed to a.
Okay, that's second paragraph of section 10. All right. People following?
And when you turn the page over, you'll see the last paragraph in that section begins any resolution that has been recommended. If you'd look at the third and fourth lines, I will read them to you. Committee to vote on it, comma, in a format specifying differences from the wording approved by the, insert the word other, the other committees. The final S is in parentheses.
No further grammatical or typographical errors noted?
That's correct.
Okay. I believe these are offered in the spirit of what the committee passed. So I will rule to incorporate them all into what is on the resolution as moved by committee. Now, I believe there are potential substantive phrases at which we either can make motions to amend one by one, or we can take up deliberation on the present wording as is, and anyone can feel free in their due time to change wording. So I actually had Martha next in the speaking order to think about substantive topics.
Well, if Dooley's got changes to suggest, that's...
Okay. If you want to defer to later, I'll keep you on the list and pick you up later. And I think... Go ahead, Dooley.
There were two that I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
And Kathy has expressed a desire to do things in order. The two I want to bring up are separated by quite a wide distance. I'll bring up the first one, which is early on. It's in number 2, roll call of members. This is a change which has come to my attention from a handful of Democratic colleagues. It did not come up at the committee meeting, but because I'm aware of it, I want to mention what it is and let the body decide what they want to do. Roll call of members. The last sentence reads, any member having answered the roll call at any meeting of the legislature shall not leave such meeting unless permission to do so has been received from the chair. That is the original wording. The committee left it in place. The comments that I have received indicate that they don't want to have to ask the chair for permission, but it should be sufficient to just notify the chair that they are permanently leaving the meeting. And so the suggested change in wording would be shall not permanently leave such meeting without notifying the chair publicly.
Could you please read it again? Shall not permanently
leave the meeting without notifying the chair publicly. That's a suggested wording to accomplish what was asked.
I think that's being offered as a friendly amendment since you're offering it and you're the mover.
I am offering it for discussion.
I'm going to take it either as a friendly rule on that or as an amendment to the motion which we debate. Is it considered friendly by yourself, which I think it is? The seconder is Pam. Do you consider it friendly? Okay, that is now incorporated into the body. Kathy.
First of all, I have a content member mention of something before that. But second, that's odd because I don't think this is making our practice consistent with our policy. I think this is a change in policy. In the past, it was enough if you had a family emergency or a biological problem that necessitated you leaving the meeting. You could wave or whisper or something like that, publicly making a declaration of your ailment or the family emergency or whatever is essentially having to publicly request permission. So that's, for me, a change in policy that is inconsistent with our current practice, and I find it troubling. To me, it's expanding the powers of the chair, which I find troubling, since we've spent 4 years contracting the powers of the chair. But okay. Before we move on to the next one, I do want to talk about the wording that I had a problem with earlier in this paragraph.
Okay. Let's start with the beginning of the document up until that point. Are there any substantive comments or deliberation before we go move to a vote from the beginning of the document to what Julie just added as a friendly motion? Martha.
I just want to make a general statement that as with the committee that is going line by line through all of our policies, our policy manual, I'm deeply grateful personally to this committee for going line by line through our rules. And, I think these changes do matter. They improve our guidelines, and I'm happy to support these small changes, what I think are small changes that further improve them. I'll take responsibility as one of the folks who hasn't heeded Dooley's pleas to give comments in advance of their committee meetings, and I appreciate the flexibility and willingness to consider suggestions even at this late date.
I saw Carol's hand, then Frank, then back to Kathy.
Yeah, I want to also thank the committee, and I'm also somebody who did not heed those calls in advance. I was one of the people who took exception after this was in our packets, and I thank Dooley for responding to my questions about this sentence. It seemed to me that the sentence as it was in here required us to raise hands and ask permission to go to the women's room, and that didn't make sense. I do like to know if somebody is temporary, I mean, I don't need to be informed every time somebody is temporarily leaving the room, but if they're going to be leaving the room and not coming back, how would I wouldn't necessarily know the difference. And that might affect my vote on a discussion of an issue coming up or tabling something or an analysis of where the votes might lie. And so I think that it will serve us well to just know if somebody's leaving. I don't expect an accounting of the reason. It's medical, it's this, it's that. Just I need to leave and I won't be returning. It seems to be common courtesy to our fellow legislators. Sorry.
Frank Proto.
I'd like to talk about that roll call of members section for just a moment myself. Just an observation. The only person under this rule, that last sentence, even with the proposed change, the only person that presently at tonight's meeting, the only person that could legitimately leave this meeting without permission of the chair would be Leslie, because she wasn't here to answer the roll call. Okay? If you read that sentence literally, even with the proposed change, any member having answered the roll call, Leslie wasn't present to answer the roll call, so obviously she could leave the meeting without asking anyone's permission. The basic problem I have with this is we're all elected officials, folks. I find it troubling to have to ask, with all due respect to whomever the chair is, I find it offensive to ask permission of the chair to have to leave a meeting. I think it's appropriate and it's courteous if I have to leave or Will or Pam or anybody else to say something to the effect, I'm sorry, but you know, I have to leave at 8 o'clock or whatever it happens to be. I have another commitment or whatever, and you get up and leave. The only time that that could be a problem is if there's a quorum question. That would be the one time I would think that the chairman, whoever it happens to be, should have the ability to say, oops, we won't be able to complete business because we've lost our quorum. But I'm certainly not supportive of having to ask permission of the chair to leave the room for any purpose, even temporarily or permanently at a meeting. I don't leave meetings too often permanently, but even though some of you probably would like me to.
All right. Further discussion? Cantaloupe Herrera.
Well, speaking of people who might be desired to leave the meeting permanently, I want to say that I don't mean in any way to disparage the work of the committee. I've been a member of the Rules of the Legislature, of the Charter Review Committee before, and I know that it's tedious work and it requires a lot of patience. The problem that I have is that if I devote a lot of time, as each of us has done, to reviewing the proposed changes, and then come to the meeting and find that there are new changes, and this happens all the time, in a way it feels that it disparages the carefulness of the attention that I've paid to what was given to me. Furthermore, when it isn't given to me in writing, it's difficult for me and for the public, I believe, to follow. I think that if I've gotten into the sloppy habit of not commenting on everything the moment it comes out, it's because it's never final until it's voted on. There's always last-minute grammatical and sometimes very substantive changes. I think we've gotten in some really bad process habits, and that's why I prefer sending things back to committee in situations like this. If that is seen as not contributing my fair share, I apologize. I want to say to the committee that I think the work they've done is really important. It's just not done yet.
Are there any other substantive changes? What has been offered by Julie up until this point has been accepted as friendly. Cantaloupe Herrera.
Well, in the first line under this section 2, roll call of members, it says, and this is what it's always said, the clerk, or at least as far as I know,
no
the
change.
Clerk shall record by name all members present or absent, and shall further record la la la. Now, I read somewhere earlier in one of the rules that we dealt with, we changed some wording from excused to from absent to excused, dealing with what kind of an absence it was. You were excused if you said something to someone ahead of time. If not, you were considered absent. So, in this context, the word absent is troubling to me in the light of our previous change, and it seems that it implies that the clerk records by name all members present or absent. Should it say or absent or excused? I just need to know because we have changed this. So I'm not really proposing it. I think it ain't done yet. Personally, I think it needs to be rethought because we've got three categories now, present, absent, and excused.
Are you proposing to change the wording from present or absent to present, comma, absent or excused?
No, I think we need to think about it and figure out another way to address this because we've changed the category and it's possible at the meeting that the message could have come in at 5:29 and so that person will end up being excused or will they if they didn't speak directly to the clerk of the legislature? I don't know.
Okay, so that's not a wording suggestion change. Will Burbank then back to Dooley?
Well, I'm inspired. I would like to make that suggestion, so I'd like to add the word present, comma, absent, or excused.
Are you offering that?
I'm offering that as
a friendly amendment. Is it accepted as friendly by Dooley?
It would be friendly if excused were the second one and not the third one.
Okay.
Present, comma, excused, or absent. Is accepted as friendly by the mover? Is accepted as friendly by the seconder? Yes, that's now incorporated. Hopefully people have made a note of it. Are there other substantive...
Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Other substantive changes as we proceed? Frank and then Kathy.
Since the last sentence, can you now read what the last sentence based on the friendly amendment will read?
Any member having answered the roll call?
Yes, keep
at any meeting of the legislature shall not permanently leave such meeting without notifying the chair publicly.
Okay. That has been accepted as friendly. It's now part of what we'll be voting on in a few moments.
Without notifying, but not asking permission.
We change.
Thank you.
How are we going? Any other changes before we move to a vote?
Yes.
Kathy Lucerer is next, and back to
you. I've got something under five, privilege of the floor. Anybody have anything before that?
I don't hear anybody, so go ahead and move.
In the second paragraph, I noticed an underlined portion added that is very troubling to me. As many of you may know, I'm an adherent or a proponent of concise notes. I'm not the most concise speaker, though, and if you ask to have a brief statement of the subject matter discussed and points made, it could increase the minutes by a whole lot. Personally, I think including and points made adds needless work and makes the minutes, it will make them even longer than they are now. I think adding that is a mistake, and I would ask that we curb ourselves and not include this in the change to the rules of the legislature.
So you're asking for a friendly amendment for those three words that are bolded and underlined to be taken out. Is it considered friendly by the mover and seconder?
No.
Do you want to make a motion to amend what's presently on the floor by removing those three words, Kathy?
I don't think it'll pass. I think this decision's already been made in caucus in a private meeting.
It was made at committee.
This is a committee recommendation. Do you want to make
all
a motion?
All of this. Watch how the votes go.
Okay. I'm not hearing a motion to make a change there. We're going to proceed to...
Sure. I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to make the change.
Is there a second to change all points made? Take it out. Will Burbank. Discussion on an amendment to change what's on the floor to be voted on.
Can you repeat what the change is and where?
Bolded and underlined words. All points made are now are being moved to be taken out.
And points made.
No, it doesn't say all.
I'm sorry. Speaking too quickly. And points made.
Can I just speak to it and
sure.
say,
sure.
I think this is another one of those things that's going to have an unintended consequence. This isn't what we do now. We don't include points made of every a brief statement of the subject matter discussed accurately describes what we do now. And points made opens the box for me to say, well, I made all these points. Why did you include what Pam said and what Dooley said, but you didn't include the points that I made? Please.
This is for discussion on that removal. I have Martha... Then Frank, I thought I saw another hand. Dooley. Okay.
Well, I'm looking at the minutes that are in our that were in our packet of the adjourned meeting, October 28, 2009. It seems to me the longest part is some specific language in quotes at the top of page 3, and there are other places where points made are
nice.
Summarized. So I think this, we've long had a sense that people appreciated not just action only minutes, I mean, and not a word by word description, but that there's value in a brief summary of things that are said, including under privilege of the floor. And I think certainly our staff has discretion, and in my experience there, they do a great job summarizing without being overly verbose.
I don't know if that's in support or taking out the words, but I'm going to move on.
I'd be happy to. I want to leave that as is.
Okay.
Frank?
I'd like to leave it as is also. I think there are...
You're there.
Frank Proto, then. Frank Proto has the floor, please. Frank Proto, then Dooley Kiefer. And then I'll speak to the point.
I'd like to leave it just the way it is and points made. The reason, we have all from time to time suggested amendments to the, and submitted changes to the minutes. And we still have to occasionally vote on them. We tape these programs. We tape these sessions, and we also, Kathy records them. And if there's something, we have to strive against wanting to make sure that things that each one of us have said are in there verbatim. And I think trying to stick with the summation, if you will, that the clerk comes up with and her staff, has served us pretty well. If there's something of that you want in there because you've said it. I think it behooves you to go back and check the tape and check the videotape just to make sure that we're not amending these for our own self-aggrandizement. But I don't think there's any harm in summarizing the points made. And we have to rely on our staff to do what they've done. So I'd like to just leave it in.
I have Julie Kiefer, then I'll speak, and then back to Kathy. I'd like to make a vote on this.
Yes.
I will speak actually in favor of taking them out because I think people have already pointed out that staff uses excellent discretion without this wording change to summarize points, including points made. So there's no point in aggravating ourselves by adding that phrase. Kathy's next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify, when I'm concerned that my words be accurately put in, I do what Martha just referred to in pointing out page 3, and that is I ask that my words be put in the record directly as I said them. That was after I had been gone for a while and had not been a part of the budget deliberations. That's my privilege as a legislator, and I utilized it then. To ask that add points made be added, I think, opens the door to some very interesting situations, and it will have unintended consequences. I feel strongly about this because of my 7 years' experience on this body, and I hope that somebody who's around 10 years from now remembers that when they start going over the paperwork again, and maybe it gets changed back to save paper or data or somebody's life. And I don't mean that as a threat. I mean hours and hours of life spent putting things down.
Jim Dennis,
analysis is made on points made, we could fall very short of that because, I'm not sure. I would love to have the clerk make the determination when a point is made because I've been here 4 years and sometimes there's never a point.
That's my point exactly. Clearly, I didn't.
My point is.
What's your point? We start every comment.
We're going to move on to Dooley, and I'd like to go to a vote on this amendment.
It finally came to my recollection that these added words reflect present practice.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on the inclusion or exclusion of and points made?
Oh.
And points made is being, the motion to amend is to take them out. All in favor of taking them out? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed to taking them out? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It fails 5 to 9. The words are still in. Are there any more substantive changes before we vote? Carol Chalk.
Yes. I have been frustrated by the fact that there really is no place in our agenda for a legislator to suggest new business that should be referred to committee. I've not talked about this in any committees or groups or caucuses with any success. I did think of an example. Something like, I came to this body when I very first heard about gas drilling. It was not obvious what committee to refer this to, and I hoped to have it referred to pretty much all of our committees because I thought it impacted what we did across the board. And in fact, that is, what happened. I suppose that could have been done individually. But I would like to propose that we add the words in number 15, the new number 15, where it currently reads unfinished business. I would like to title that new and unfinished business. I'm open to changing the location for this, but I do think that legislators ought to have a chance to
removing new and.
So the words that would be added then under number 15 at the end of the first sentence, let's see. No, in the first sentence, it would be a list of unfinished business,
comma,
new business topics that legislators are requesting to have referred to committee, comma, and special orders to be acted upon by the legislature.
Is there a second for that amendment? Will Burbank seconds? Is there discussion? Martha, Dooley, then I will speak.
I think it's a good addition. Could you tell us again what gets added on that last part? New business?
Yeah. If the sentence would read, a list of unfinished business...
Comma. New business topics.
You've got to introduce it, though. New business topics that legislators are requesting to be referred to committee, comma.
Legislators are requesting...
to be referred to committee.
And, comma, no and special for, orders to be acted
right,
upon
no need for
by
the second
legislature.
Comma. That's what's on the floor. We're deliberating it now. And Martha?
Yeah, I was in favor of that.
Are you, no more comment. Okay,
that's
Julie,
right.
Then myself, and I see a few more hands.
So, as I understand this, the change is just asking the clerk to keep track of requests made by legislators, which requests could be made at any time during the meeting when a particular program committee is giving a, chair is giving a report and you have an idea of something that program committee might want to consider in the future, you would suggest it then. And the clerk under Section 15 would keep a record of that as a separate new business item. Is that correct?
No, actually, you know, my aim is to have a time of the meeting that we are invited to say, I have this new business, not to spend hours on it, but here's a topic, where should we refer it? So I don't know that I'm achieving that with the spot I'm putting it.
Well, you've put the words on the table. We're debating it. Duly finish your concern.
So you're suggesting
if it's, if I had misunderstood what Carol said, then my comment is, I think that one can do that under one's privilege of the floor.
Yes.
That's specifically called for.
Most of what.
Okay. I'm going to comment, and then we'll move on to Mike Hattery. I'm in agreement with Dooley that there's ample opportunity for legislators to raise their hand, even at inappropriate times. If they get called on, they can bring something up and ask it be referred to committee. And I believe adding a whole section of new business, not being debated by committee, to even come to our attention as new business, does open up quite a vehicle for staging long-standing debates on something that may come up that we will not be in very much control of. So I am not in favor of adding this to our order of business. Our rules of the legislature and order of business are to have an orderly progression of discussion. And this is adding a completely new element that I do not want at this point to add undebated. On to Mike Hattery.
I was going to reaffirm what Dooley said, and that is that this is one of the something that fits clearly under legislators' privilege of the floor, unlike most of what we do.
Jim Dennis.
There are 10 committees on this paper that you can make a reference to and refer to, and in numerous committee meetings that you can attend and put your thing in. I don't think we should change anything because I can envision someone putting forward something under this new heading and easily someone saying, well, I don't think that should be referred. So you end up talking about are you really going to refer it or not, and it could be endless nonsense.
Further discussion on whether to add this new item and phrases that has been proposed. Ready to vote. All in favor of the amended order?
Wait. There were other hands up.
I'm sorry. Frank, did you have your hand up? Okay, and then Carol, and then Dooley. I didn't realize.
In an effort to, even though this hasn't been finally approved, in an effort to be respectful of the new proposed item 5 and the last sentence, which is emboldened and underlined, members of the legislature shall strive to be equally precise. All I will say is ditto to Jim's remarks.
Great.
There's so many opportunities we don't need.
Excellent. And I'll need
more concise, or less concise.
Carol Chow.
Okay. So as I understand it, though, what I propose has the clerk keeping a list of the new items that have been proposed as we go along. It is not necessarily creating a new section of the meeting. It is keeping the list.
Okay,
and
on to Dooley.
People seem to be...
That's your interpretation of what you propose. Dooley Kiefer.
I have another section I wanted to amend. I didn't have anything more to say.
Okay, on this particular amended new word in Order of Business 15 and new phrase in that section, Order of Business 15, all in favor of the new wording? 1, 2, 3. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That fails 3-11. On to any new sections. I had Kathy Luz Herrera and Dooley Kiefer.
I think Dooley was...
All right, Dooley, go ahead.
Well, this is the second one that I want to offer as a change by me. After consulting with our legislative clerk, I want to add language to Section 5 at the end to reflect present practice. The last paragraph of Section 12 is standing in special committees.
Section 12?
What did I say?
You said 5.
You said 5.
I'm sorry.
Okay, standing in special committees. Second to last page of this whole batch.
Yes, and it's under B, motions and resolutions.
Yes.
And it's the third and final paragraph. There's an underlined sentence. I'll read you that sentence with a modification and an additional sentence. A committee may request an explanation be added as a footnote to the resolution when it believes other legislators or the public would benefit from additional information. Such footnote may be included in the minutes and proceedings. Such footnote shall be included in the minutes and proceedings at the request of any legislator. It's my understanding that that's current practice.
Okay, the phrase as a footnote was added to a bolded sentence, and a new sentence was added beginning with such footnote shall be
included in the minutes and proceedings at the request of any legislator.
People are scribbling quickly. This is purported to be in compliance with our present practice. That is being offered as an amendment. Is there a second? Pam Magasey. Discussion. Kathy Luz Herrera.
I'm having a little bit of confusion because the sentence starts out talking about a committee requesting an explanation, and it's ending up with an individual legislator having a footnote be added. So just clarify for me what the current practice is.
At committee meetings, very often there are requests made to add explanatory material to a resolution, and it appears in our packets as a footnote after the resolution usually. At the legislative meeting, any legislator can ask that that footnote be included in the minutes because it seems that important.
So for me, a committee may request an explanation is the part where I'm getting confused, because in my experience, sometimes there's one member of a committee that asserts that privilege of asking for an explanation. Some committees vote on it, some committees don't. Calling it a current practice is a little confusing to me because it's kind of committee chair's discretion. At least it has been in the past, and this would expand committee chair's discretion, I believe.
In Dooley's explanation to answer to your question, I believe you added a nuance, Dooley. You said at a legislative meeting, such footnote could be added at the request. Is that what you intended, as opposed to at a committee meeting?
I meant at a legislative meeting.
Right.
That's where we act.
Right.
That's
you right. Did not say that in your wording. Is that your intent?
Yes, it should say at a legislative meeting.
Okay,
I'm
so
sorry.
There's a distinction here.
That's correct.
Kathy's right in drawing attention to what is purported to be practiced at a committee meeting, and that's in bold, and the phrase as a footnote has been added.
Yes.
Dooley wants to add this whole other thing, which is now on the floor for debate.
Explain what you just said.
At a legislative meeting, such footnote shall be included in the minutes and proceedings.
Normally a footnote from a committee meeting that's part of the resolution on the floor here does not get into the minutes. It's just an FYI, folks. If a single legislator at a legislative meeting wants to incorporate that footnote into the body of our minutes, our proceedings, for time immemorial, they can do so with this wording. Further discussion on this wording change. Frank Proto.
Yes, on this wording change, the very first part of that sentence needs some more clarification. A committee may request an explanation be added. I know this is not what you're asking, but an explanation of why the members of the committee voted a certain way, an explanation of why is it to expand the understanding of the meaning of the resolution and the impact? We need to say something there because
The end of the sentence, I thought, said that. It's what's in there.
Additional information.
The benefit from additional information.
Additional information on why you voted a certain way.
About the resolution.
About the resolution.
Okay.
That's what went through committee.
All right. What's presently bolded is on the floor, is the main motion. What's being moved as an amendment is the phrase as a footnote to that sentence bolded and the new sentence. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of those additional phrase and a new sentence? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed to the phrase and new sentence? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, 8. That fails 6-8. Is there any further substantive changes before we vote on the full motion? Kathy Lewis Herrera.
Thank you. Just in the paragraph above that, Mr. Chair, when I saw in bold the part that said, and if possible, a readable copy of the revised resolution, it made me think of the times that I've gotten revised resolution with little bitty printing on it and words that I couldn't read. I know that in practice, the staff does a terrific job of getting us changes in a timely manner. I worry that readable copy can be construed handwritten copy, and it's somebody's opinion as to whether it's legible or not. For myself, I would like just to say a copy of the revised resolution because, frankly, I think that there's a way that sometimes handwritten changes it's hard to tell where they're put, and if we just say copy, that conforms to current practice, but if we say readable copy, it opens the door for handwritten notes to be submitted by legislators to the legislature at the last moment, and I would not like to see on my desk that sort of thing, and I don't want to include it and add it, so I would not like this change.
I suspect this is being offered as a friendly wording removal of one word, readable. Is that acceptable as friendly to the mover and seconder? Taking out the word readable.
I would like to check with the other, with Frank and Mike, to see if they think it's friendly. I think it's friendly.
Friendly? Is it friendly to the seconder who's Pam McAsee?
Sure.
It's friendly. The word readable is now out. I think I had Greg Stevenson's hand earlier.
I was just curious about the old number 6 or former number 6. It talks about privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Currently, I think any municipal official can get up. The example given seems to indicate that it's the leader or the head of a political subdivision, the mayor or the supervisor. Is that our intent, that just the head of the political subdivision can speak, or is it still any municipal official? Because the example doesn't really indicate that it's...
No, the example is simply an example.
Okay.
Someone can be sent from, even a clerk could be sent, not an elected official, to represent and report for that municipality. But I will point out that paragraph is still under 5.
Right.
But the title of where municipal officials speak has been changed. It's now, it's under 5, it's now 5B. So you have public, you have municipal officials, and legislators.
I was just curious, it doesn't seem to make it clear to me. But
okay.
I was going to vote against it before anyway, so it doesn't matter.
All right. Are we ready to vote on the motion with all these different various amendments, some friendly and some being voted in? People understanding what you're voting on?
I imagine.
We're just in under an hour. Kathy Lewis Rivera.
I appreciate the effort, and I appreciate people listening to my proposed changes. There's some core problems that I have with this, so I'll be voting against it, but it in no way disparages the work of the committee. And I do understand that, at least it was discussed in a private meeting last night, that these changes are not written in stone and that this may be revisited. I don't know how true that is, but I hope that that is true and that we continue to revise this living document.
Let me speak to, I will be actually supporting these changes. I interpret our rules as our rules, and every new legislature particularly has to understand the rules of the game when they come in, so that there will be some interpretation differences. There'll be a culture that's developed about how strictly something's enforced, how rigidly or flexibly, and I think this is a good attempt to update those. It is not a final attempt to update them, because you never, I believe, can codify the interpersonal relationships and how we act, but this is a good starting point. So I'll be supporting these changes as moved and amended.
God, I hope not.
Further discussion? Are you ready to vote?
Our interpersonal relationships.
All in favor of Resolution D as amended? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and opposed. 1, 2, 3. That passes 11-3. Thank you, Dooley and Rules and Procedures Committee. Further questions, Kathy?
Well, there was a resolution that was pulled from the consent agenda.
That's B, and we'll get to that on a different committee report.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was this committee.
No. There's no further questions for the committee. There is a meeting, I guess, on the 21st. This discussion, I think, highlights participate early and often. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since, as Chairman, I did not give a report at the last four meetings, I'd like to take this opportunity to bring you up to speed on about an hour and a half's worth of...
Let's make it five.
The committee will be meeting next Tuesday, the 8th, at 3:30. The only item, and we're assembling the agenda now, the only item that I would like to remind you of is that this Friday, if you have an opportunity, the Chamber of Commerce is having a luncheon at the Holiday Inn. And the two groups that are receiving Large Business of the Year and Small Business of the Year, if you want to categorize them that way, the Cougar Medical Center, both are health-related. The Cougar Medical Center is receiving Large Business. Sorry, Nathan. And the Cancer, what used to be the Breast Cancer Alliance, is receiving Small Business. And I hope some of you can attend. I intend to attend as committee chair.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's no questions. We'll move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Sorry. Dooley is our vice chair. You ready to report?
Actually, Kathy's the vice chair.
Why did I?
But Leslin had asked if I could give a report.
Okay.
The
thank you.
Meeting, so.
Thank you.
So under the new rules, that's a designee, right?
No, that's municipal official.
No.
Let's debate it.
Anyway, let's debate that.
Dooley, go ahead.
I just didn't want you to give me a title I don't have.
My mistake. I apologize.
So we met November 19th. It was a fairly routine meeting. There was a report on recycling revenues and solid waste plan, which will be developed during next year. To be completed by 2011. We voted on budget adjustments in Resolution A already tonight, but I wanted to make clear to everybody that the money that was being transferred in, the revenue, came from federal and state emergency management funds. So it's one-time money, which was available to cover these equipment needs in the department. It will not be available to cover them next year, so that's going to be a budget problem for next year. And what was new and of interest, especially at the Facilities Committee meeting, was a draft highway access law and a discussion of that. At the request of the Council of Governments, our county attorney drafted a law in the form that would be usable by towns. But it's a law that could be, and I hope will be, adapted for county use. It would require trucking companies to apply for a permit at the highway division and have the potential damage to the road examined and a bond posted. No action was taken on this. It's not clear that this is the best approach for the county to take to deal with heavy truck traffic on our local roads. And the county attorney continues to work on alternative approaches. But it's a topic that is very timely, and I hope that we can do something soon. And the next meeting will be December 10th at 3:30.
Questions or comments? Martha Robertson.
Council of Governments continues to be very active on this. I think there's a meeting Friday. It's still here. No. There is a different model, and I think the town of Lansing kind of has put it in place, and other towns are really looking at it, where it's not dependent on a finding of damage, but there's sort of more protection up front. And I can't remember the details, but I hope Jonathan, I think Ed said that you were, I was hoping that you would be going to be going to that meeting, but I hope that facilities will look at that. I think that the version that I saw, I think, depended on us doing prior documentation of the condition of every road and then us proving damage. And I think that that's not really the way to go. Bill Sesney has talked about a way of evaluating truck traffic based on the axle loading and the weight of the trucks, which could be, I mean, if you there's damage to a road with very heavy trucks, even if it doesn't cause failure while those trucks are, operating. It can shorten the life of a road, for example, and then that's meaningful damage. So I think the town of Lansing law is maybe a better way to look at that. So.
Yes, all I could report on was what was discussed at the
right.
meeting.
Right, so I'm just sort of raising that I know that there is active discussion of a different model, and I hope we'll follow that up.
Thank you. If there's no further comments or questions, we'll move on to Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee. Nathan Shinigawa, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. The Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee will be meeting next, not this coming Friday, but the following Friday after that. And we'll do things like talk about the logging of hours, as David had mentioned earlier. Also, we'll need to do an update on how voting machines went, how the voting machines worked, the new voting machines in the past election, and we'll do that report at GPWR with the hope of bringing it a report to the legislature as well in the future. I have a resolution. We have not actually met since the last meeting, but I do have a resolution because of the way that in which our meeting, the date in which our meeting is set. And so it's resolution B, adoption of revised administrative policies. And this was pulled from the consent agenda. I just want to say first off that before I move it, simply that a lot of the changes here reflect changes that basically the changes reflect current practices and make us in line with what we negotiate, and because a lot of them are personnel related, and also for the reasons that Dooley will probably be talking about soon, she did allude to them in committee, and we did instruct her and personnel that we were okay with them looking into these type of changes. So it's not anything new. I think this should be relatively uncontroversial as long as we choose to make it so. So that's it.
Seconded by Mike Hattery. Discussion, Julie Kiefer.
Yeah, I ask that this be pulled off for only a change to one of these policies. It's the one called Application Information Availability. I want to suggest a change in title to Employment Application Records. which is more parallel to the next policy called personnel records. And it's referred to as employment applications in the body of the policy anyway. And the other change would be in the procedures list. There are three paragraphs. The top paragraph would be moved to become the bottom paragraph so that it's a more logical flow of topics. The second paragraph would be the opening paragraph. If you have a vacancy, you must request applications from personnel. The third paragraph would become the second paragraph. Personnel will respond in a timely fashion about requests for applications. And the last paragraph will be what is the present first paragraph, that applications can be shown upon request and under what conditions. So those are the changes, to reorder the procedural paragraphs and to retitle the policy to employment application records. And I'd like to move that.
Is that friendly to the mover?
That is friendly.
Friendly to the seconder, Mike Hattery? Change of title and reordering? Yes, it's friendly.
Okay. We'll see how uncontroversial this is.
Okay, we're ready to move towards the vote. Discussion. Discussion on all these policy changes. Carol.
Yeah, I have one other item that I'd like to suggest as an amendment. It is in the personnel records. It's one of those, it's the second page. It's in that middle, under procedure, that middle paragraph.
Second
where
page?
Where it says, okay, so personnel records, under procedure, the middle paragraph there, mm-hmm. where it says each employee shall be given copies of all performance reviews, see policy 2-14, that are placed in the employee's personnel file. I would just like to add, after the parentheses, and other items. So each employee shall be given copies of all performance reviews, according to policy 2-14, and other items that are placed in the employee's personnel file.
That's been moved. Is there a second? Or is it friendly?
I mean,
actually would defer to, we don't have our personnel commissioner here, but Jonathan.
She's down the hall.
She's in the hall.
Well, my question before I asked whether it's friendly is, does every item that gets placed in the personnel file have to be copied under this wording change? Copies given to employees, and would there be a huge burden if that is changed? I know that's the prerogative of legislative to make the change on the floor. I just want to ask for interpretation.
I'm not sure. Are you talking about the language here, or is
no? The proposed wording change, would it be a steep burden?
Tell me what the proposed wording change is.
And other items, basically anything. Any dust mite that gets put in the personnel file, a copy has to be given to the employee. That's the wording change. Well,
I mean, I'm not sure I can say. I mean, some personnel files are pretty large, and others are really small.
Right. Well, go back to Carol. She's made this motion. You can ask it. Is it friendly to the mover and second?
Not friendly.
Not friendly. Okay. Do you want to seek a second? Seconded by?
No, not by.
Dooley Kiefer. Okay. So it's now on the floor as an amendment to that personnel record policy change. Discussion. Nathan, then Carol, then Jim, then Dooley.
Yes. Very simply because... and other items is simply just too vague. We don't know what that means. I don't want to put the county in that type of risk. Secondly, people do have the ability to get access to notes and other documents that are put in there per their bargaining agreements anyway. So I don't think that we need to, if it's in their bargaining agreement. So I don't think we need to add this because already there's enough just transparency, I believe, for our employees in their records.
Okay, Carol Chalk is next, then Jim.
Yeah, right now employees, as part of the same policy, employees are now able to view the contents of their personnel file. They have to know to make an appointment to do that. So there's nothing in there already that they're not entitled to see.
I'm questioning how they would know that there would have been a change to their file so that they should go and look at it. So I might be satisfied with, rather than actually having to say, if the problem is that that it's maybe too big a list of items to send them, I'd be happy with each employee shall be given copies of all performance reviews that are placed in the employee's personnel file and to receive notification when other changes are made to their file.
Okay, well, at this point, we're discussing the phrase and other items.
I just think the burden shouldn't necessarily be on each individual employee to go every few weeks or every month and need to look at their file. They should just know when. That's a friendly management thing to do to let people know when a change has been made to their file.
Okay, Jim?
The current practice is managers, supervisors, department heads cannot put anything into a person's folder without that person seeing it and signing it. If they put something in unsigned, it matters none. It's invisible. It cannot be used for anything. Anything that's inserted into a personnel folder has to be signed not only by law but by contract. So it's not necessary to add any words to anything.
Okay, Abdul and Martha.
I wanted to ask what other items than performance reviews might be in a personnel file.
Letters of commendation?
Yeah.
So, and they would have to be signed?
Absolutely.
Okay. So then I think what Carol is asking to add is current practice. It's more than performance reviews.
No.
Anything that goes in there and gets signed.
No, signing is not getting an additional copy, being given an additional copy.
Yeah.
Adding the phrase all other items would mean you have to get a copy, not just sign it. That's my interpretation of Carol's proposed wording. Martha Robertson is next.
Well, a question is, all of our employees are not in unions. Are they covered by the same practices?
If all our department heads are operating at best practices in HR, they should do that, because otherwise the employee has the ability to sue if in some case they're dismissed by documents that are in their personnel folder that have not been observed by them and or signed.
Okay, and if somebody wants something that's in their personnel file, can they get a copy of it? You know, they're going to get a copy of the performance reviews. It doesn't say they're going to get a copy of accommodation letter or other items. Could they get a copy if they wanted it?
Look, in reality, if I'm a department head and I write a commendation letter for you, you're the first person I'm going to show the letter to. I'm not going to sneak a commendation letter into your personnel file. That would make no sense. I mean, come on.
Okay.
There's a reality that we have to recognize our employees, our department heads, and our supervisors do.
Okay, but there might be something that's negative. Could you?
They can't do that. They cannot do that. They cannot put a negative thing in. It would mean nothing if they did it.
Now, I heard you about the signature. I'm asking about a copy. If you wanted a copy, can you, when you get an appointment to look at your file in the office, can you get a copy of something that you don't have?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
I have Carol next, then Pam.
Okay, how about if I withdraw the motion that I made before the amendment and then introduce a motion, can I do this?
You can do it.
That with the new wording, that is, each employee shall be given copies of all performance reviews, see policy 2-14, that are placed in the employee's personnel file, and to receive notification when other items are placed in his or her file. If that's current practice.
Okay, you withdrew the and other items. You're now proposing other wording. Is there a second to the other wording?
So it's notification.
There's second to notification wording. Do we keep for seconds? We're now discussing the notification phrase. Discussion on that. Dooley.
I support the concept. I'd like to shorten what you've proposed, Carol. So let me try this on you. Each employee shall be given copies of all performance reviews, see policy such and such, and notified when other items are placed in the employee's personnel file.
Fine. Yes. Do at least worry.
I see this as a very impractical thing. I mean,
Jonathan, just a second. The wording that's been accepted and seconded, has it been captured? Can you read it out loud again?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Given copies of all performance reviews, see policy 02-14, and notified when other items are placed in the employee's personnel file.
Okay. Everyone understands what's on the floor as an amendment. Okay, further discussion. We've asked Anita to join us. I'm not sure if she's available, but she's been asked. Any further discussion? Are we ready to vote on this change before we vote on all the policies? All in favor of adding the notification phrase, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That passes 3, failed 3-9. We're back to the main motion, which had one change in terms of a title change and a paragraph reordering for the employment application records policy. Ready to vote on this entire slew of policies. For discussion, all in favor of the entire slew of policies with one change. Is there anyone opposed? Passes unanimously.
Did those people get permission to leave?
All right. I have a quick announcement, too.
Please.
Yeah. Also, just a reminder that tomorrow, the presentation of the SEPA students that did their work, that's the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs, that did work. What? Oh, sorry. That did work relating to civil service reform. They're going to be presenting their work tomorrow in the Bev Libse conference room in the Human Services Building at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
And that goes until 5. There's 3 hours worth of different presentations.
It could. I think 4 is probably the natural end of this, but it could go beyond that.
4 hours or 4 o'clock?
2 to 4. There's how many presentations? How many groups? Four groups?
I think 5 groups altogether.
Okay. And I guess people can, if they can't make the whole thing, you're welcome to stop in for part of it. What
Joe, are they giving anything in writing that we could? Are they also presenting a report in writing?
They will, yes. They're going to do a PowerPoint. I think many of the groups will do PowerPoints, but they will also have a written report that they will provide to us.
Yeah, each of the groups looked at different aspects of civil service. So some, I think, did the historical analysis. Others looked at it more prospectively, things like that.
Good. Thank you.
Normally I would have taken a break at 7:30, but I thought we were move earlier. We're getting close to moving into executive session. There's no individual member filed resolutions. Who'd like to move minutes of October 28th? Pam moves them. Frank seconds them. Is there any discussion or wording changes? Are ready to vote?
Excuse me, I was out of the room on that personnel item.
I know you revisit it. You could, but you could also just be logged as out of the
room. You didn't recognize me, right?
We declare you absent.
All in favor of the minutes of October 28th as submitted? Anyone opposed? That's unanimous. Who'd like to move to go into executive session at 8:15? Jim Dennis moves. Mike Hedery seconds. This is for purposes of labor negotiations and a personnel matter. We do not anticipate taking any action after this executive session. All in favor of going into executive session? Any opposed? That's unanimous. We'll take a 5-minute break to break down the cameras and recommence the executive session. Thank you.